Hey, everybody. Welcome to... Oh, wait. Never mind.
Kidding.
I am live. Well, you know, welcome to Buzzing About Romance, where, you know, on a whole, we tend to be a bit of a shit show.
Hilarious.
I am Becky, and I am super excited to be joined by some amazing romance authors this week. I am joined by author Amy Award. And Micah Lane and Sylvie Stewart. Welcome to the podcast, friends.
Hold on. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm super excited to have you here joining us. We are streaming on YouTube, and then this will go on our podcast feed when we're done. But if anybody is joining us and has never done one of our live streams episodes before, you can ask questions in the chat and I will pass them on and ask the authors. And really, unless it's completely ridiculous, we'll answer it.
I'll answer anything.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of boundaries or rules.
More ridiculous, the better.
Right? Give them all to us. So our amazing guest authors, Amy Award, is known for her witty football rom-coms. Micah Lane, the queen of steamy writes that are lighthearted and contemporary romances, and Sylvie Stewart, whose heartfelt and humorous stories captivate readers. I do have to say, I was trying to think about it, and I was trying to debate which of you is probably the spiciest of the readers, because we know Amy. She likes the slow burn in her contemporaries, though. It takes forever for people to do it.
It's not that I like the slow burn. I don't even like a slow burn. It's accidentally don't do it until like 2/3 the way through the book.
I think Micah won, though. I think Micah might be our...
Ooh,
I went looking, so. And in... So for Buzzing About Romance, we call the point where the stuff happens, the pop. It's the put-out percentage. It's the percentage of the book you have to read before there is on page naughtiness or fun times.
Oh.
And so I went looking in the back of what I have read of everybody, and I think that Micah pops earlier than... But Sylvie, you were a close second, just so we know.
Depending on what you read, I might have been, but I actually do slow burn a lot.
A lot of my books... have been reverse harem. So when you have three dudes, you know, you got to get the party started. Yeah. Everyone has to have their chance.
Right.
There's no time to waste.
It's a lot. And I will say, I do, Michael, enjoy your Y chooses, your thruples and stuff. Like, you don't give me too many guys. I start to get a little lost when I'm like, hands, two holes, a mouth, like... More than four or five, I start to get lost in the numbers.
When I first started writing them, I would have four guys, and I thought, like, oh my God, this is out of control. So I cut back to three, and life became more sane.
Three's comfortable. I don't have to pull Barbies out to see where things are going. Does anybody else do that? Like, is it just me?
I don't.
Am I the only one with sex Barbies? Okay, it's just me. I think Amy froze, but she'll be back. Okay, so until Amy comes back. Oh, Amy, you made it back. It's okay. At least it was a cute freeze.
Yeah, you looked good.
I love a cute freeze.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And I always look like a, you know, gargoyle. Like,
right. One time I had my mouth hanging open. I looked ridiculous. Amy, if you freeze and you need to hop off and then come back on your phone, it's fine. Just come right back in. No problems. Whatever you need to do. We'll just keep going. Okay, so we'll start here with Micah first. What drew you to romance? Because what we want to do is we want our listeners to get to know you guys, especially if they've never read your books.
Well, consistent with the comment you just made about steaminess, I kind of backed into writing romance. I always really loved reading and writing erotica, and it was kind of a hobby. And then I was thinking, like, this is something maybe I could do for a living, because the corporate world wasn't really cutting it for me. But then it kind of evolved. I'm like, no, I'm gonna morph this into like romance stories, because then I felt like I could have more of a story going on rather than just erotica. So yeah, I just kind of, it's not like I set out to be a romance writer. It just kind of evolved out of my interest in writing naughty bits.
Naughty
It
bits. I mean, that works though.
works for me so far, so good.
Were you always a writer?
On one
Storyteller?
level, yeah, I think so. I mean, I was in the corporate world and I did marketing for a long time, but which is, you do a lot of, I mean, that's why I ended up doing marketing, because that's the one part I think of the corporate world where you kind of can do a lot of writing. I wouldn't say I didn't always do creative writing. That came later.
Really?
Yeah. But I always liked writing. Like if there was a, if I could write a, if I had to take an exam in college, I would almost always get a C, but if I could write a paper, I could probably get an A. So that's kind of the only thing I've ever been good at. So
I'm sure you're good at
that's
others.
why I'm here.
What about you, Sylvie? Why romance?
I mean, I've always been a writer. I've always written fiction stuff, just like short stories and things. But I had twins and they had some medical problems too. So my life was completely just like consumed by these little boys. And so I couldn't handle reading anything heavy when I would read, because I would spend a lot of time in their rooms while they're falling asleep reading and, waiting in the car for them reading. I couldn't handle anything heavy. So I got back into romance after, I mean, like I read Harlequins like forever ago. But no, I got back into reading romance, mostly rom-coms, and I was like, okay, all right, this is good. So then I published.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, romance, and I know people feel differently about this. I have a, my oldest has health and medical issues also. And romance was the escape I needed. You spend countless hours in waiting
Yes.
rooms, and you still have to keep an eye on your child and make sure they're not licking things and,
Yeah.
or ultrasounds take hours and you sit there. And I mean, I'm fairly certain my child was probably 2 weeks old when he got a book dropped on his head for the first time.
Oh.
I mean, he's 21 now, so there were not e-readers or phones then. So just, a mass
Right,
market.
right.
Just a mass market. He's fine.
Yeah. Same with mine.
Probably better to drop a paperback on them than a phone
Right?
or
I mean,
a
think how heavy some
true.
of those phones are, an iPad. I mean,
Ask
yeah.
me how I know. I was reading once in bed on my phone and started to fall asleep and it fell right and gave me a fat lip. So
Oh,
I
wouldn't
drop.
want to do that to a baby.
No, I drop my Kindle fairly often on my face.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty bad. So both of you kind of write a little bit on the lighter side, a little bit on the more rom-commy side. And so there is discussion of covers. And I have to ask you guys, because you both win, just so you know, because your illustrated covers have faces. They're not like burlesque, like blurred. Like,
Oh yeah.
I don't like the no eyes, no nose. Like, how do you wear glasses, but you don't have a nose? Like, illustrated, the vector
Yeah.
covers.
You know what? That kind of reminds me of I don't know if you guys remember when this used to be a thing, when people would get these weird dolls. They were like 3 feet high or whatever. But they were made to face into the corner of the room, so they had no
Yes.
face. That was the creepiest thing ever.
Or the
Sounds
ones that
like.
were like supposed to be the little kid, like with the ghost, and he had legs and pants. But then if you lift that, and it had a head, but if you lifted that sheet up, there were no arms. There was no
Ooh.
hair. It was weird.
Okay.
Is weird.
Well, I don't know. I like I go back and forth a lot with the illustrated covers versus the Manchester covers
Yeah.
versus just like
An
a fun
object.
cover that has neither.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like the Manchester ones sell the best. I don't know.
I love a man chest. Like 10 out of 10, I'm buying the man chest. And when an author will be like, "Oh, the man chest isn't available in the paperback." Okay. I guess I'm not buying a paperback. My trophy shelves didn't need it. I I love a man chest. There is something pretty spectacular about a man
I'm
chest.
actually in the process of recovering my latest series for just the ebook, sorry, with Manchester.
That's okay.
It's an
It'll be
ebook,
okay.
though.
Amy, if you can't turn on your camera and you're just gonna do voice, which is cool, just let me know and I can make it so that we at least see a square with your name on it, so you're not just the voice looming in the shadows. Is she there? Did she come back?
No, I'm
Oh,
here.
you're
Can you hear
here.
me?
Yeah. You might leave the
Okay.
camera off. It might just be easier that way. Since the internet, since you're on hotel internet. We're talking about covers, and Amy knows how I feel about faces. She's listened to me complain about them.
Looking at one of mine right now to make sure they have faces. I'm
They
like,
just
yeah.
need eyeballs, nose, and lips. That's all.
Works for me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
Covers are weird, right? Because I'm an old school romance reader. I am older. I started reading romance in 1990. And I'm used to the cover changes, frequent cover changes. You know, if we think about it, hardbacks would have one cover, and it would be 18 months till you got the mass market paperback of a book. And then the cover would change. And with each run, because you know they'd have a print run, so maybe this book only got 1,000 print run with this cover, it would switch it up again. And then you'd get step backs. And the other thing that makes me laugh are people that complain about like the Target stickers that they have to peel them off. And I'm like, you do not understand. If you read old school mass markets, the cover runs would have the sticker imprinted into the
Oh.
book, and it would take away, like, I think of the Joanna Lindsay, one of hers that the woman is kneeling down and it looks like she's getting boob fucked on the cover of the clinch cover. It's pretty naughty. I have it. But in the second run, they add New York Times bestselling sticker emblem on it and cover his butt so his butt's not naked in the second run. I'm like, way to destroy a cover.
You're like, that was my favorite part.
Right? I liked the butt. But I mean, I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on covers? What do we think about covers?
Lost. I don't know what works and what doesn't, but I don't know. I just feel like, especially for digital, the man chests do the best.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a person who's good at identifying patterns. I know kind of what I like, and I was getting maybe a little tired of the man chest, so I talked to my cover designer and said, "Can you do some illustrated covers for me?" Especially as I got into writing more like rom-commy stuff, so it felt right, and I was pretty much just going on instinct, and they
No.
could all blow up any day.
Yeah, I love illustrated ones. They're cute.
Like, I super pay attention to the trends, and it's why I did the cartoon covers in the first place. But I knew that I did not want the weird no faces, which is why I got the cover designer that I did, because her art is art. It's not just pictures,
Yes, I
you know?
love your covers so much. They're so good.
They're really great.
The first time I saw the first book in the series, like, I think I literally squealed when I saw it the very first time. And I immediately emailed Lenny back, and I was like, "Lenny, I know this is a weird, crazy thing to ask, but would you be okay if I got this as a tattoo?" And she's like,
Wow. Okay, there's frozen face.
There is a frozen face.
But I do want to see that tattoo if it ever
If it ever
happens.
happens,
Right?
I don't have tattoos. Do you guys have bookish tattoos?
I have no tattoos at all.
Me neither.
I have no tattoos. My husband's like, I don't like tattoos. I'm like, ah.
Yeah, I'm not a tattoo person. I don't know. Germs, needles.
It's such a big commitment. I mean, both my sisters have them, and every now and then they'll say, let's all get one together. We'll get the same matching thing. And I always back out and they get kind of mad at me, but I can't think of anything I want to look at forever.
Yeah. My mom has tattoos, but she got them after my dad passed. Not that my dad would have cared, but like she had a little bit of a midlife crisis at 65. But I mean, she loves them and she's always like, you can get one. I'll pay for you to get one. I'm like, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for asking. So in writing, especially when you're writing something like rom-coms, which all three of you tend to write a little lighter, more contemporary rom-com type romances, I would say all of your books give us really great emotional arcs for your characters. Like, there is good character development. Even in, you know, the Why Choose, we see character growth. I would say none of you are just writing vibes, which is my current, like, it's Thank my you. Current thing. So how do you balance these deep emotional arcs, rom-coms, and, you know, spiciness?
It's like Sally Field said in Steel Magnolias, the best is laughter through tears. So, because you're feeling everything. So I always want to do that. You've got to be able to cry at least one at one point in all of my books. You've got to at least tear up.
Like, I get a lot of readers who message me and they're like, oh my God, this book totally made me cry. And I'm always like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
No.
I want to cry, Amy.
I know, but I don't want to cry.
I think crying, I want that emotional, because I feel like that's a sign that we connected to those characters, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're feeling their emotions, if you're feeling their desire, if you're feeling their angst of being, you know, awkward, then I think as a writer, as an author, you told that story in such an exceptional way that we connected.
Yeah. How about you, Micah?
I mean, I kind of think of it as real life, because there's so many ups and downs in real life. I mean, we have good days, and then we have our, oh, can I swear on this, Becky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's right, because I heard you drop an F-bomb earlier. We all have our good days, and then we all get our shit sandwich, you know, and nobody goes through life without both of those things. I don't know anyone who's hasn't, you know, had setbacks. So I guess it feels kind of natural to sort of try and balance the two, because it's kind of how I experience the world.
Well, you want people to relate to the characters. And so what's more relatable than a realistic kind of a balance?
True.
Yeah.
And Amy and I've talked about it before. I am a fan of the third act breakup, or the third act dark moment, the angst that they have to overcome something, even if it's a suspense element, they have to overcome something together. I want that. I want that emotional, like, clench of, like, okay. Because to me, that reconfirms the HEA. And I know that the current trend is no third act breakup, people hating on miscommunication. I think that romance and miscommunication are synonymous.
I think it depends on the story. I mean, I have one book that does not have the third act breakup, and no one's complained about it, at least not that I'm aware of. But it just kind of happened that way. Like the two main characters, this is not reverse harem, the two main characters definitely hit some big bumps in the road that they had to work through, but it didn't include a breakup. I don't know. I think it worked. I hope everyone else thinks so, but it just kind of happened by accident. And if that's like I said, I'm not good at identifying trends or even listening to trends, but if that's a trend, I'm like, I don't know. I just have to kind of feel it.
I think if the story lends itself, like, I don't mark off points on Amy's books because they don't have that moment, because they're overcoming deeper emotional stuff.
Right. We do always have, like, I will always write what we call the dark night of the soul. You're right. The struggle that they overcome and the eventual happy ever after isn't as satisfying if they didn't have anything to overcome. I mean, that's why we read stories, is to see people grow through those arcs. So if there's nothing bad that ever happens, then it's not satisfying to us at all. I just don't like it when they're mean to each other and they break up. I just give them some other reason that it's going to be the dark night of the soul. You know, sex scandals. That's fun too.
Right. Well, Well, it forces them to confront something, right? Give them a sex scandal or an interfering mother or something.
There has to be something to get over. Yeah. If you don't have something to get over, then it's just a slice of life. It's not a novel.
Yeah.
It's just a, hey, here's a moment in time for these people in their life. I mean, it has to have an arc. And I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I'll do like the big third act breakup, and sometimes I don't know if people like this better or not, but sometimes it'll just be like circumstances. They're on vacation and vacation ends.
Mm-hmm. Which we see a lot in fake relationships, right? They're not technically together.
Yeah, right. I mean, so sometimes it can be circumstances. Sometimes it can be something horrible that happens, or sometimes it can just be, hey, you know, this is, each of them are getting over something and they need a little space or something.
Yeah. I think for me, it just, no relationship is 100% perfect all the time.
No. Yeah.
I mean, I've been married to my partner for 25 years. We've been together 26. And right now our slice of life is great, right? Our children are grown. Things are good, you know, whatever. It wasn't always like that. And sometimes in a romance, when you get that moment, that circumstance, that dark moment, that miscommunication, and then they come back together and overcome it together, or overcome it and then are able to be together, it just reconfirms that even though times are tough, good times can happen going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it just, you know, I think it makes them stronger, and it just says, okay, yeah, they're going to be together forever.
Yeah.
H-E-A. Forever. I'm also one. Okay, so do you have, maybe when you're writing, do you have a bad bookish trait? Like, do you like to do certain things to your characters, or are there things that you don't put in your books for purpose that you know that people would really like to see you put in your books?
Ooh.
Ask because my terrible bookish trait, I don't read epilogues.
Oh, no.
Never. Well, I have to read Melanie Moreland's because she says if I don't read them, she's going to kill me off in one of them. So now I have to read them all.
I'm going to use that against you.
Epilogues.
So I think it comes from, I started reading Bodice Rippers in the 90s, like the Joanna Lindsays, the Jude Devereaux's. And those books often start with the scandal, the dark moment in the beginning.
Oh.
They're forced to get married, and then the story is them coming together, maybe overcoming some other issue, and they get their HEA. Like, they go on and live happily ever after. There aren't epilogues in those. Julie Garwood never put an epilogue in a book.
But the epilogue ties everything up.
But could it have been, if I have to read it to get the full effect of their HEA, then shouldn't it have just been another chapter?
I do look at epilogues as kind of an add-on, not necessarily tying things up. So if you skip it.
Yeah, it's like, it's supposed to be a bonus chapter, right?
But now I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't do it that way.
I think I'm the only one that doesn't read them. Everybody else, like, I said it one time in a live podcast recording, and I said, yeah, my bad bookish trait is I don't read epilogues. There was a collective gasp. Like, everyone was like, what?
I feel like it's like the cherry on the sundae for the reader. Like, we're giving them something extra because they don't want to say goodbye. So you're like 6 months later, and then you get to see them like together, and, you know, anything that happened in the book, you know, where there was maybe a bad person who needed to get their comeuppance or whatever, you can be like, oh, and so-and-so ended up in jail, boo, 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 you know, like some kind of satisfying, like, morsel.
Yeah. But if that's all it is, and you wrote the story in a way that it tied all of my worries up for the couple, I don't need the epilogue.
Yeah, you're right.
You can have a sundae without cherries.
You're right.
I mean, it might not be as good, but it still hits the spot.
See, sometimes I use an epilogue, though, to introduce the next book. Like, the two characters who are going to be in the next book, you get their meet cute in the epilogue. I've stopped doing that, but sometimes I do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely treat that my epilogue. I don't even a lot of times even call them epilogues. I really do call them bonus chapters, because I for sure tried to wrap the story up within the actual book, like within the chapters. But like with the epilogue for my latest book, the Kitty Cat.
You can say it.
All right. I just don't want YouTube to be mad at us. The Pussy Next Door. Obviously, there's a cat in my book, right?
Right.
In my bonus chapter that I did. I did a scene from the perspective from the cat. That's hilarious. You can't be missing out on that, Becky. You want to know what Seven of Nine Lives was thinking.
I mean,
that's so clever. Becky.
I don't.
It was very fun.
I think that's great. I mean, I think that's fun. I don't know. I mean, like, if you have a quirky grandma and the grandma gives a point of view, that I would read that. Like, I love a quirky old person. But overall, sometimes, especially when, okay, and I haven't seen this in any of your books, so you all are safe. But sometimes you get, like, five epilogues.
Oh, yeah.
End the stinking story, people.
No, sometimes we're too attached to our characters. It's not always for the readers. We don't want to let go.
Let it go. I don't need five epilogues.
I can't let go of any of my characters. So all of my series are interconnected because I can't let go of any of my characters.
So you write in a world where everybody.
Yeah.
I definitely do that with my 80 award books. They're all interconnected. And it's hard to not be like, ooh, who can be in this epilogue?
What?
I did do one book that had three epilogues. It just got kind of carried away. But one of the epilogues was a cookie recipe, so.
I mean, that's okay. I do like a recipe in a book.
Yeah.
I
do too.
And I probably will make the recipe. Like, if it's in the book, I'll make the recipe.
Delicious. You know.
I am that person. Stacy asked in the chat, would like to know how the three of you met and became friends.
Oh, it's my fault.
This is your fault.
I've only talked to Micah online, but Amy, I know.
Yeah. I know Amy from like the conferences and so forth. Yeah. So
people sometimes I'm just like, hey, you're gonna be my friend. Hey, do you want to do this podcasting with me?
What? But Micah, you and Sil, you guys wrote a book together, right?
No,
who did you wrote?
I wrote with Marika Ray.
Marika. Okay.
I write with her. Yeah,
that's the hot flashes.
Yes, the menopause. The menopausal women with the retiring hockey players.
Yes. So I had it as Mika Lane. It was the one who was. Anyway, I'm really enjoying it because as a menopausal woman, I'm like, yeah.
Girl, we need to stop.
I really am liking the midlife romances.
Me too.
I enjoy a whole older heroine. I struggle sometimes, and I think it's because of the stage of life I'm in right now. My children are 21 and 19. So new adult and college is very hard for me.
Oh,
yeah.
Becky, do you ever come across books that have characters with your kids' names?
No!
My kids have pretty generic names. I have a Christopher and a Sydney. So it's pretty common. Names are fine because I married a man whose family uses the same five names every generation. Like everybody has the same five names. So names are names. Like it doesn't, and I can't say anything. I have a brother who's a third, you know, I don't know. We repeat a lot of names in our house too. Just not as much as my husband's family did. His mother has like 215 first cousins, and I swear most of them are Marys, Elizabeths, and Glorias.
That's crazy balls.
They're nice.
How is that even possible?
I feel like that's so great, a rom-com.
His grandmother was one of 16 children, Australian and Irish, and Catholic. That's how that happens.
Say Catholic, yeah.
Yes, everyone's name is Mary.
Yeah.
Mary Elizabeth.
Or middle name. If your first name's not Mary, your middle name is Mary.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. And they're the sweetest people, and they are so kind. But yeah, everybody has the same five names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was brought up Catholic, and Micah, my middle name is Maria.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. My middle name is Marie. My sister's middle name is Mary. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
My sister is Anne Marie. Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
I was almost a Ruth. Instead, I got Rebecca. So, you know.
Very biblical.
Yes, we are. I always like to say, like, my dad was a deacon in the Catholic Church. Like, he almost became a priest. So, yeah. Yeah.
I think I've read a book about that before.
You might have. We are fairly – names are interesting. So, how hard is it for you guys to name characters?
I love it.
I do, too.
Do you
sometimes I just know their name. Sometimes I just know.
Yeah.
But it took me a while with the Kingmans to come up with all of their names because I knew I wanted to do the alphabetical order thing. But I also knew my first character's name was Christopher. And I was like, that's not how you do the alphabet. It doesn't start with C. So I made his parents A and B so that I could start there.
Brilliant.
As I was going through the alphabet, I'm like, what names that are sexy start with G? I don't. No, George. Not going to be George. Sorry, George.
Well, that's how you tell the age of all the Bridgerton kids, right?
Right.
Oh, yes. Legit stole that from Julia Quinn. Like, straight out. Thanks, Julia.
She's doing the work. It's fine. Mike, how hard are names for you?
You know, I feel like each book it gets a little harder because I'm nervous about repeating. And I know some authors are super organized and they have these like Bibles with all their content organized, and I don't. So I just kind of have to like bushwhack my way through it. And, you know, I do search online like everyone does, I guess.
Oh my God, babynames.com or whatever.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Or like good, you know, popular French names, popular Spanish names, popular Russian names. You get some ideas. But
most popular name for someone born in 1999 or whatever.
Yeah.
Website.
You know, it's funny.
I don't think, go ahead.
You don't think you've what?
I don't think I've repeated yet. And I've written enough books that I figure if I do repeat, maybe the reader won't remember.
I don't remember.
How could a reader remember?
Micah, I think you and I are soulmates then because I don't keep character Bibles.
I don't either. I had a reader start one for me for my 80 award books, and I was like, you're amazing because I'm never going to do it.
As somebody that does this for authors as part of my living, I need you all to know if you ever write a second gen, please come see me, please. So we don't lose babies or children, you know, like.
Oh, yeah.
My color changes. Yeah. Profession change.
Yeah. Come see me, please.
Sometimes they get new jobs.
My God.
Oh my goodness. It's
all just football players. It works fine.
It's so funny because today I was actually helping Carrie and Ryan. She went on babynames.org or babynames.com, and she just, nothing was speaking to her. And I'm like, listen, sister, you named a whole family with ease and then expected the reader remember all of the characters.
Oh,
So I gave her like five names. I'm like, how about these five names? Do you have characters with these five names?
I'm going to introduce Carrie Ann Ryan to the alphabetical order of the family. It's brilliant.
She did her Wilder Brothers series that is out right now. The six brothers all have E names.
No. Yeah. Carrie, you're fired.
She is fired. She knows.
No more naming your own characters, Carrie Ann.
In my latest series, all the kids had names that were named after the parents' favorite music stars.
Ooh.
They were all, it was the oldest one's Carter for like the, you know, June Carter family, because they were all country music fans, sorry. And then there was Cash for Johnny Cash. And then, Denver for John Denver. And
I love that.
Miller for Roger Miller. And then Lynn for Loretta Lynn.
I need someone to write a modern day Mama Cass fan fiction romance. You know, because there's a lot of drama about Mama Cass.
So much drama.
She's such a cool lady and kind of mysterious.
Because she, like, when she passed away, no one knew the father of the baby.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the oldest, Phillip's daughter, was like, hey, let's do a DNA test.
All right, Becky, you got to write it.
I will fix your words, friend. I will fix your words. I will categorize your words. I will give you feedback on how I think your stories are. I will give you a trope listing. I will do all those things. I do not write words.
No, Mama Cass would be a really fascinating character, because why did she need so deeply to keep that secret?
Right?
That's some good, deep, inner monologue.
So
stuff
much
going on.
Unrequited love, too, because if you think about her story from her first band, and then when she fell in to with the Phillips and became the Mamas and the Papas, and how they wouldn't let her join. I'm just telling you, some Mama Cass fan fiction. I need someone to write that.
I like it.
I'm obsessed with her. I love Mama Cass. Like,
I love her voice.
Yeah.
And I love that she's from Baltimore. And I'm from Maryland. So
yeah.
So talented.
And she was beautiful, and she didn't get the respect for her, how beautiful she was.
Legit.
You know, in the 60s and 70s during the, you know, when thin was best. And
yeah.
I mean, we all lived through the 90s. So
era. Yeah.
Heroin chic. So, and we survived. I just think.
I just read an article that they're saying that kind of the unspoken crisis of menopause with women now is anorexia. Because
really?
It's like you're going backwards in life again. You're pretty much going through the hormonal changes you went through in puberty, but you're the opposite way. But women are like relapsing. They've been fine. They've been not fine. They've been survivors and strong
in recovery. Yeah. Time.
And then they hit menopause and they revert back to teenagers, like in the way that they view their bodies in food.
They kind of have this like obsessive desire to get skinny again, like when they were young. Oh, wow.
I mean, the body positivity movement has taken a big hit. Uh oh. Can you guys still hear me? Oh, can
yeah,
I?
Yeah.
It said, can audio hold, please?
You're fine. You're there.
Are you talking about Ozempic?
Well, yes, it is the age of Ozempic right now. That is what we're living in. And I saw a meme the other day, and it wasn't wrong. And it said the two things holding up our economy at the moment are Taylor Swift and Ozempic.
Yeah.
And Ozempic has taken such a huge toll on the body positivity movement, because everybody can take a shot now and learn how to starve themselves.
Yeah.
Well, that's healthy.
So healthy.
It hurts my heart so much. And I'm sure that that is part of what is feeding into women in menopause right now, because we grew up in the era where Kate Winslet was fat. Kate Winslet was never fat. FYI. By the way, in Titanic, she was not fat.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. And, you know, Monica on Friends, she is portrayed as 50 pounds lighter than I am right now. And she was fat as a child.
Oh, and the whole fat suit thing?
Yeah, the whole fat suit thing, all that kind of stuff. It's taken such a toll on women our menopause ages that I'm not surprised that I don't think it's because of our hormones. I think it's because of culture. Again, sorry, I got all excited about that, but I'm mad.
No, I don't disagree with you.
I think the connection with the hormones was more about like when you hit menopause, your metabolism pretty much stops.
I mean, yeah.
So you start gaining weight, even if you are continuing your healthy habits.
Yeah.
Start gaining weight. And so then women who have a history with eating disorders, then it triggers it.
But it also is coming from going into the doctor. I recently have had some health issues and I am a bigger person. And I've always been like borderline, almost like that pre-diabetic phase. And I am not diabetic yet, but I went in and my A1C was such that the doctor was like, you know, after you get all your test results and everything comes back, we can get you on Ozempic. And my mother had gastric bypass in the 90s and went from heavy to thin. And it was a nightmare. Like, I love my mother very much. And now there's some health issues, you know, 30 years later. I don't want that. Like, do I need to lose weight? Yes, I am not diabetic, but I do need to watch what I eat and get more exercise to be overall healthy.
We all need to watch what we eat get more exercise. Regardless, I have been chubby my entire life. Same. And never once have I been pre-diabetic. Ever. Never, ever. But does every doctor want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
I never had I never had gestational diabetes with either of my pregnancies. And you go into the doc, like when you're pregnant and they're like, well, we have to test you for that. I'm like, yeah, okay. Wow. I can't believe you aren't.
Uh-huh.
Oh, what? Okay. Yep. Thanks.
But it's why, so I love that, especially when we get to read stories about midlife, whatever, menopausal, women's fiction, I don't know what else to call it, where they are battling that same, but it's the same battles that we had to battle when we were in our 20s or in our teens. And I think that that's so important for us to have in romance, because we're so much the genre of hope for everybody, not just when you're in your 20s, but also when you're in your 50s.
And I do love that in that we're seeing the midlife romances, you know.
So many more than there ever used to be, right?
Right. You know, my children are grown, they're in college, and there is life.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the best things now that my children are older. You know, my husband and I, we can go and leave for the weekend. We can do things. And I don't have to worry about who's staying home with the kids. I just have to tell the kids, please don't let my dog die while I'm gone. Could you please feed and water the dog?
Yeah.
I mean, their grandmother lives downstairs in an apartment, so it's fine.
Perfect. Did you guys ever see that movie called Failure to Launch with Matthew McConaughey?
Yes.
They're all excited he moves out and his dad gets the naked room.
Yes.
Because there's no kids, so he can walk around naked now.
That's all right.
Yeah. It is Terry Bradshaw, yes.
It is Terry Bradshaw walking around naked.
I have to watch that again. It's been a long time.
And isn't the mom Kathy Bates?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
She's so funny.
Oh, I love her.
Okay, so back to romance books. So this kind of follows along. So how do you navigate the balance between portraying realistic romantic relationships, but also providing that escapism and the HEA? So that kind of goes into those miscommunications, third acts, real life problems. How do you balance that when you sit down to write? And you're all like, I just sit down and write. Could you stop asking me how I'm solving problems?
Yes, that's my answer, Becky.
Is it? That's a good answer.
Yes, what you said.
Micah, do you, like, are any of you plotters in your stories?
I am. I'm both. I'm a planter. Like, I do plot, but I only need, like, I just need some of the plot points to know where I'm going. And then it's going to change halfway through anyway, as I discover who the characters really are as I'm writing their chapters. So kind of, I have ass plots.
What about you, Mike?
I'll do a pretty detailed plot because if I don't, I start to feel anxious, but then I deviate from it tons.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of look at it as like planning a road trip. Once you're actually on the road driving, you see something better or another route that's more promising. So I don't really stick with them much at all. But if I don't have it, I just kind of start to freak out. I guess it's kind of a safety net for me anyway.
Well, you need, yes, but I love your analogy of, wait, look at this fun roadside attraction over here I want to go see.
Yeah.
So when you guys are writing, does the whole book play out for you like a movie? Or is it just that the story is kind of voices in your head? Or is it a combination of both?
Well, I think for me, like, I mean, it is a movie once you're done with the, I mean, when you're writing the chapter, yeah, it is a movie in your head, but I don't think that, I mean, I don't know how the whole thing looks, you know, it's as I'm writing, like, I definitely am envisioning these people, where are their hands? What is in the room? What does the voice sound like? Stuff like that.
Yeah. What about you, Micah? Do you like, is it like a movie that plays in your head, or are you creating it as you're writing it?
Definitely a movie that I'm creating as I'm writing it. Just like when you read a book, you kind of have the movie playing in your head because you're picturing what's happening and you know, you have an idea of what you think the characters look like and what their houses look like and their settings and everything. So when I'm working on a story, it's kind of the same thing. You know, especially if I'm kind of like in the flow and really like getting into it. I can kind of see the whole, while I'm typing, I can kind of see the whole thing play out.
Okay.
So I think of that, it's kind of like a movie.
Yeah. What about you, Amy? Do you have, like, do you see it like a movie, or is it just it goes as you write it?
It's the movie is playing as I'm writing it, for sure. Like, I'll occasionally get a glimpse at future scenes. I can't see the whole movie beforehand. But sometimes I have some of those other scenes that I know this is going to happen. And I've seen that scene. I just got to figure out where it's going to go.
I'm just curious about it because what prompted that question was like last year where the whole, like, when somebody tells you to close your eyes and visualize the apple.
Right.
And like my partner, he doesn't see the apple. I see the apple in red in detail. I'm a 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just sees black.
Yeah. That's so crazy to me that our minds are like that.
Right. I always see the apple. Like,
I can taste the apple. I can take a bite of that apple.
And I can smell it.
It's got that kind of waxy thing from the store. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's always interesting to me how authors see their books, you know, and do you get the voices percolating in your head, or is there an idea that just kind of takes hold and you're like, I have to write this down. Even if you're in the middle of another book, there's this thing in your head that will not leave you alone and you have to write it down. Because then I know there are other authors that are like, they just sit down and start writing and don't necessarily have a plan or a voice in their head that's talking to them.
You have to know some, to a certain extent. You can't.
I don't think some people do, though.
I don't think there's, I've read the books. I'm pretty sure there are some that don't.
That fascinates me that someone can sit down and tell a story. And well, I mean, I'm assuming they hit all the points that we're supposed to, you know, Dark Night of the Soul and everything. Maybe if you don't plot, you miss those. I don't know. I think some people can wing it and they do fine. I wish I could.
Yeah.
I mean, I've introduced characters that I didn't know were going to be in the book. When I read the chapter, I'm like, oh,
I love it when that happens. Yeah. I was like, surprise.
Yeah. I actually, I was just writing the other day for the latest book in our Hot Flash Hookups series with Marika And I made a little comment. We do a Google Doc of the whole thing, so we do alternate chapters. And I just wrote a little comment. I said, "Surprise! He has a sister." Okay.
Well, so actually, J.R. Ward, last fall we went to her Readers on the River in Louisville, and she doesn't always have ideas when she sits down. She just knows she has to write a book, sits down, knows the world, but just sits down, and whatever character comes on page is the one she's writing about.
Wow. I literally have to think about my books for years in advance, and I didn't really know that that's what I was doing until I had to write a book that I hadn't thought about, and I was like, I don't know. Most of my characters, I have to have thought at least about the premise of their book, literally for years. But, and this would be interesting to me if Micah and Philby, if you guys do this, I grew up, and I didn't realize that everybody didn't do this. I essentially tell myself stories as I'm going to sleep. Like you would, like, you know, read to your kids to tell you a story. I still do it to this day. I imagine things as I'm going to sleep. Now they end up in books, but they didn't always.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just a creative mind is a little different than a more analytical mind.
I don't disagree with that. It's really interesting to me how it is so different. So Claudia asked in the comments, what is your favorite thing to read in a review, or do you not read your reviews? Like, what is the thing that you want to have the nice DM in your social media that says, you know, XYZ?
For me, hands down, it is, what was your actual experience while reading the book? Not, I loved it, it made me laugh, it made me whatever. I want to know, like, one of my all-time favorite reviews, and I only... Truthfully, I can only read the 5 stars because the other ones hurt my heart.
Fair.
Whatever. But one of my all-time favorite reviews was, she almost missed her bus. Yeah, not getting on the bus, getting off of the bus. Because she was so involved in the story. And another one where the girl was like, I called in sick to work. Like, that is an experience that happens to you while you're reading the book that tells other readers, this was so good that I had this experience while it was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's high praise. I've had a few reviews where people have said they've stayed up all night long reading the book.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, really? Thank you. Yeah.
What about you, Sylvie? Is there something you want to hear?
Yeah, the stayed up all night, and I'm so tired today. One, the
I threw my Kindle across the room. That's a delicious one. Sorry, I broke your Kindle.
I'm fairly certain I did that in cock. I had some moments of anger.
I also like the one where they're like, "Oh my God, I was in a waiting room reading this, and I am so embarrassed now. Everybody's staring at me because I'm laughing."
Yes, that's a great one for.
Love it. Love that.
Those are all good ones. You know, when I go looking in reviews, I want to see the reviews that say, "Oh my God, there was so much spice in this book, not a lot of plot," or "The chemistry was outstanding. I couldn't put it down." Like, I don't want a book report.
Right. No.
I want a feelings report.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand the reviews where they just, like, retell the whole story. Or what about the ones where they just, like, reword your blurb?
Yeah. I got it. And I didn't need a synopsis because, well, and that's another thing I don't do. I don't read blurbs. Basically, you sell me on a title, a trope list, and a cover. Any one of those or a combination of those will sell me on a book. So if I'm going into a review, it's because I'm not exactly sure if that... Sometimes covers can be deceiving and you don't know if the book is going to be spicy or not. And I want spice.
A lot of readers don't know what's right in reviews, and that's where summaries end up happening. They're like, this is what happened in the book. But I want to know what happened to you. while you were reading the book. Like, I know that that book is spicy if somebody says in the review, this was a one-handed read.
Or I was blushing through this book.
Yes.
Or, you know, I...
This book made me feral for my partner.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a spicy book right there.
Those are the things I want to read. Those are the things that are like, okay, then this is a book for me. And because I probably am a little more of a mood reader, just because if I'm not reading for work or for the podcast, I, you know, tend to read more like where my mood is. So if I want something that's, you know, a little lighter or a little bit of suspense, you know, tell me that. Like, I did not see the whodunit here, you know. Jenny says her last read was an ugly cry. See, and that's a book I would read when I knew I had to cry.
Right? If that's what you're looking for, that Jenny having that experience and putting that in her review makes me know that book is worth it to me if that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, and that's
And
that's part of something we try to do with the podcast, especially our community that's interactive and engages with us. I know there are certain books that are for certain people, and there are certain books that aren't for some members in our community. Like, I know there are several in our community that have content and trigger issues, and so I know not to recommend, or if it's going to push their boundary, you know, I'll be like, hey, I do think you would like this story, but it is going to push you into your a little bit of your uncomfortable zone.
Yeah. Well, not everybody, and not every book is for everybody.
Right.
And that's hard for authors to accept sometimes. Like, I want to make all of you so happy, but not everybody wants to be happy all the time. Fine. Don't read my book.
Well, and so have you ever had to break up with a trope? Like, when you're writing, like, you've tried to write this trope several times, and every time you do it, it just doesn't land.
I can't write enemies to lovers. Don't tell anybody.
This does not surprise me at all about you.
I can't do it. I've tried a couple of times, and like, they're enemies for like 7 sentences, and then he's like, oh shucks, I don't hate you.
Micah, have you had to break up with a trope?
I don't know if this is necessarily breaking up with a trope, but I did do a series of mafia romances. And I think they came out okay, but I realized they just weren't like dark enough or mean enough. Like, I just don't have it in me, right? Like, my happy place is to write something light about like a hot mess of a heroine. So I kind of had to, I guess I had to break up with my mafia books.
That's okay.
Maybe I can read your mafia books. I can't read mafia because they're too mean to each other, but I think I could read yours, Micah.
We did an episode where we graded the mafia as far as like, gray, mafia light, mafia gray, and dark mafia, because there are author and there are people that want kind of that crime, that underworld, but they don't want the darkness of mafia, which I appreciate. Like, I accidentally a million years ago picked up Buttons and Lace. It was in my library by Penelope Skye. And that book is dark. Like, these people that are like, oh my god, Haunting Adeline is the darkest thing I've ever read, I'm like, you have not read Penelope Skye. Because that book opens with the heroine being sex trafficked by her fiance. Like, it is dark. And all the triggers. And again, it was, I read it before the dawning of trigger warnings and all that kind of stuff. And I read it, I liked it. Her world is, you know, interconnected and stuff like that. But I know there are people that we will not be ever recommending that series to.
Me.
Yeah. I like reading a lot of some of the dark stuff, but I just don't think I'm that good at writing it.
Yeah. But there are people that want mafia, that want it, but don't want all the drug trafficking or the, you know, violence. I struggle with motorcycle clubs.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a little bit of a degradation towards women.
Yeah. I can't write dark.
Yeah.
And I realized that if I want to write like an ultra alpha character, the whole book needs to be from the woman's point of view, because I can't be ahead of a super ultra alpha.
Fair.
Kind of justify. I don't know. I think I would just make him too nice.
He can be an ass to everybody else, but soft for his heroine.
I want like Sunshine Mafia. Is that a thing?
Sunshine Mafia?
Melanie Moreland. Melanie Moreland. Her Men of the Fall series.
They are
Sunshine Mafia.
Sunshine Mafia.
They are. Okay. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions. Then I'm going to ask you what's next. And then, because we've hit an hour. See, I told you we wouldn't talk about anything of any. This is what we do. Okay. Like single phrase, single word answers. We'll just start with Micah. We'll go Micah, Sylvia, Addie, or Amy, whatever we want to call her tonight. What is your go-to snack while writing?
I'm trying to be good lately, so cheese sticks.
Okay.
It was Goldfish crackers, and now it's string cheese.
Cheese. Amy, what's your go-to?
I'm much more of a drinker, so my go-to is Earl Grey tea with cream and sugar.
Okay. If you weren't a writer, what would you be doing? Micah?
Nothing. It's all I can do. I don't know if that sounds sad, but it's really kind of the only thing I'm really
good at. I agree. This question does not compute, Becky.
Okay, bad question. I will not use this one again.
I'd like to be a rock star, but that, you know, that's not going to happen. So right.
You're not going to be a Hooters waitress either.
Oh
no,
no.
I'm too old.
I've never been to Hooters, but I would go to.
This is my window. I miss my Hooters window.
My boobs are too flat now. They hang down too low.
We need midlife Hooters.
Midlife Hooters. Sylvie, do you want to answer that, or are you saying never mind?
Oh yeah, I would be a not very successful graphic designer.
Okay.
That's what I was before I was an author.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Now if I really couldn't do this, I was a teacher of English as a second language for a long time.
Yeah.
And I loved it because I could do it all over the world. So that's what I would do.
Micah, coffee or tea?
Tea, for sure.
Sylvie, coffee or tea?
Neither.
Neither. Are you a Diet Coke? Diet Pepsi? Diet Dr. Pepper?
Seltzer water.
Seltzer water.
Bubbly water for the win.
Okay. I'm a coffee drinker.
I'm a both.
It's like both. Self-medicated ADHD. if you could have dinner with any of your fictional characters or any fictional character in the world, who would it be? Anybody?
I pick James Bond.
James Bond?
I can't. It's too hard.
Amy, do you...
I'm going to Kingman Family Game Night all day, every day, twice on Sundays.
I would go to that. Right. I love a game night. Okay, so what is next for each of you? Micah, what's next for you? Do you have a current release and an upcoming release?
I have a book coming out in October called, I'm looking at the bulletin board over my desk, From Wink to Kink. And it's a my third hockey rom-com about a stuffy librarian who accidentally ends up on vacation at a sex retreat. And she meets a hot hockey player there who's also there unintentionally. So.
Oh, fun.
I can't wait for that one.
That sounds fantastic. Sylvie, what do you have going on?
I just released the last book in my Love on Tap series, which is about a family that owns a brewery in Asheville. That one's called Stout of My League. And it's a sports romance. And then next is the next book for Marika and me in the Hot Flash Hookup series. This one's called Night Sweats and Hockey Nets. And it's the woman is a recent widow, and she's just moved to town. She's the coach's daughter, but they're grown, you know. And then the guy is a goalie who's like, he's super growly. It's a Grumpy Sunshine.
Oh, and sounds he's fantastic.
Super growly, and he is dirty in bed.
Love that. Amy, what's next for you?
Let's see if I can be on camera for 2 seconds and my internet not freeze. So I just released The Pussy Next Door, which is the third book in the Cocky Kingman series. And then have a little bit of teeny tiny bit of time off left before I'm diving into the next book in the series, which I have not revealed the title yet. We're having very much fun guessing the title over on my Instagram right now. It's not The Axolotl Downstairs.
I know it's not.
It's going to be dating lessons.
I love a sex coach, a relationship coach. Love that. Fun. Well, thank you, ladies, for hanging out and joining me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was really fun.
Quick Patreon update. Thank you to our swag pack sponsoring authors for July, Elaine Trommel, Sienna Snow, and Sarah Bale. We appreciate you sending us goodies to send out and share with our community. You can find out more information about becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/bookcaseandcoffee. Make sure you join us back here Wednesday night for our discussion of Wild Open Hearts by Catherine Nolan. This is our July book club pick. And we are back next Sunday night with our Olympic romance book picks. Opening ceremonies are Friday, and we are going to share Olympic romances on Sunday.
Awesome.
You can find the current list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website, and don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts. If you loved this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Your support helps us bring more exciting content to you every week. Again, ladies, thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Of course. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.